Dykus, you are the chairman of the Northeast Kansas City Historical Society. Thank you very much for joining us today to talk about your upcoming homestead.
Great. Thank you for having me, Michael.
October 14th is the day you are going to have your annual. How many years have you been doing this now?
Well, let's see. This is the 10th annual. However, we couldn't do two of them because of COVID. So it would be number 12, but this is 10, actually counting them up. So.
And your homes tour, it looks like you're going to have six properties on this year's tour. What neighborhood will you be in this year?
Right. So this year we are back in Skerritt Renaissance. As we were last year, we really like to move around to different neighborhoods throughout the Northeast area. But sometimes when we have volunteers that approach us and say, hey, I'd really like to be on your next tour, that kind of helps ground us or orient us to a specific neighborhood. So we were in Skerritt this year, as we have been a few years, but we really like to move around to all six areas or six Northeast neighborhoods.
I know that one of the cooler places that I went through was when you had the tour in Lykens and you had the old fire station down on 12th Street open. And I'm not sure if it was occupied then, but it was, and just spotlighting the different neighborhoods, I think is so very important for the larger community. To kind of, hey, we're here in historic Northeast, come and pay attention to us.
You know, that's a great point. And one thing that when we were first founding or developing our organization, is we really want and still believe in with our board members that all six Northeast neighborhoods are equal. All six have important histories, important families, important events and incidents that took place there. So we really don't like to intentionally, by any means, overshadow or favor one neighborhood over another. Sometimes it's a little more difficult to get some neighborhoods involved, not really any fault of their own. It's just, you know, as we continue to be out there for a number of years, it just takes a while to get word out there what we are, what we're all about, and, you know, to get people's involvement.
Let's tell our listeners and our readers what you are all about. What is Northeast Kansas City Historical Society all about, and what kind of drives your mission?
Great. So we were founded in, I guess it would have been 12 years ago, maybe 2012. And so we became a 501c3, and all of us who were involved with that development or that initiating process were former board members of a neighborhood association. So we knew a little bit about at least, obviously, the part of town and what we were hoping to create. To start with, though, what we all agreed on and still believe in is that we are, it's what we're not. And we're not a neighborhood association. Mm-hmm. We don't compete or have any type of conflict with neighborhood associations as far as what our mission is all about. We like to think that we focus more on the past and what has transpired in the development, growth, occurrences within the Northeast area, where our understanding of our then board members was that neighborhood associations focus more on the future, on how things are now, how to stabilize, how to go forth and develop the neighborhoods. Well, we look at the past. Northeast Kansas City Historical Society looks at where we have been as far as the families and the buildings and occurrences.
And how those families, occurrences, and buildings shape the community of today, really.
That's a great point. Yeah, because that's what we're all about. I mean, if we lost our architecture or we lost our stories or history, all we would be is another part of town that happens to be kind of near downtown. The people still don't know where Northeast is. They think it's Liberty or someplace like that.
Gladstone.
Right, right. So it is confusing, but, you know, we are all about establishing where we have been and really where we do want to go, but as far as always being history-minded, we don't undertake the arduous tasks of graffiti or, you know, homelessness, which those are, you know, ongoing issues that we see more as being, you know, the neighborhood association, you know, taking ownership and doing that, and I know they do what they can. But that's not what our organization is. So we're more on the history, preservation, researching. When we first started our group, we had heard from so many people like yourselves that had so many stories, and they'd share these and they'd bounce them off. And, you know, there were previous homes tours that we could kind of develop and work from to build our foundation. But we, there wasn't a ton of real documentation of some of those stories. So that's why we, as an organization, really try to focus on documenting the histories and the stories and the people that have helped develop us to what we are today.
One of the strongest preservationists that I think I've ever met would be Dory D'Angelo. And, you know, born and raised in Northeast and has written many a book in regards to Kent City history. And at the dedication of the new, I call it the Anderson Avenue Bridge,
right?
Because that's the way that it was built. Then right. You know, all the postcards say Anderson Avenue Bridge. The Richardson Graham Bridge, I believe it was in, I can't remember when, 20 years ago, give or take.
Right.
But she pulled me aside and said, you keep doing what you're doing. History is so important. And she paused, and I remember this, I quoted it yesterday in another podcast. Every time an old person dies, a library closes. And it was profound to me because, I mean, let's be realistic, it's coming from Dory D'Angelo.
Right.
And so that right there, but it's so, so true. And
right.
It's so true to get those histories, which is why I'm a big proponent of what the museum is doing in terms of oral histories. And we have the opportunity to partner up with them on a project. And our first person that we're going to interview is Mark Morales' father.
Sure.
And he's a lifelong Northeast guy. They got married. He proposed to his wife. He was refereeing a boxing match at Whatsoever. And he, between matches, he proposed to his wife there at Whatsoever Community Center, went back in and refereed the rest of the matches that night. And then, in his words, they went off and had a Coca-Cola and had a date that night.
Right.
So that it's so important to get that
done. It is. That's wonderful. You're going to interview him and get his stories, you know, what you can, in a place that people can listen to it or, you know, review whenever they want. And when they research that Sheffield or wherever in the Whatsoever Center and all that, then, you know, it's going to be there for them.
Exactly. And one of the things that, and I'm toss this out there, you and I both are, we trash dive. And I'm sure you've gotten some treasures out of the trash along the side of the street, you know, as have I. It's so important, I think, for families to realize that there is an outlet, such as Northeast Kansas City Historical Society. Don't trash that stuff. Donate it to this organization that will archive it, that will keep it, and save it for future generations.
Excellent.
So that I just want to put that out there.
Perfect. Thank you.
As kind of a, we'll put that in a bow tie on top of that, and we'll move on to the tour.
Okay.
So this year you are in Skerritt. Talk about some of the houses. We'll just jump right in. One of my favorites. People always love the big houses. I like the smaller off the main drag houses. Let's talk about Renzino's house there at the corner of Windsor and Bales.
Right. So all of these houses, kind of coincidentally, had been houses that, and including the museum, of course, that we had researched prior within Northeast Kansas City Historical Society. We had put them in one of our books. A couple of them had been on a couple of our previous tours several years ago. But so the house you're talking about at the corner of Windsor and Bales, okay, you know, that's probably the one of the six that are on our tour, which includes the museum as one of those that I know the least about, but I've only been in it a couple of times, but I was in it fairly recently as we were trying to put together our booklet with the history and the docent volunteer scripts that so they know what to say when visitors come during the tour to that house. But I tell you, when I walked in, it was such a treat. Not only is it still beautiful on the outside, but the inside, it was one of those that was all original. All the woodwork was still there. And the dining room, I'd forgotten about that, is absolutely massive.
Yes.
It's one of the largest I've seen in the Northeast area. And that's the neat thing about these houses is that you think, oh, well, I kind of know what that's all about. I've seen a similar house over, you know, in a different neighborhood. But these are the nice surprises that you don't anticipate. Like, I didn't remember that dining room is so beautiful. And so to step foot in that, not only because of its size, but because of its architectural detail, is really appealing. But the house does have a great history. And I know that Barbara and Kenny, who own it now, I think they moved in around 2006 or so.
That sounds about right. I think that's when Kimberly, I think they rented from Kimberly before they bought. I may be wrong, gotcha. But that's close. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But, and they're folks that, you know, believe in the preservation of it. They furnished it very, very appropriately. And you really feel comfortable going into it from the standpoint that it's not a wow factor, like, oh my gosh, look at what they did to this. It's like, look at what they've saved,
mm-hmm.
and look at what they've been able to sustain throughout its 100-year history, or however old it is.
And you'll have the original architectural drawings out on display as well, right?
Yes. Barbara, the woman of the house, told us that she does have those original drawings. She's going to have them out, I think, on the dining room table, because that's the largest expanse.
Mm-hmm.
And she also has, in addition to those plans, she also has maybe three vintage photos from probably the 20s when the house was built, which are really, you know, are treasures, because not all old houses come with those kinds of images. But she has those, so those will also be on display, so you can kind of see what it looked like then and how it really doesn't look all that different now.
That's my wife and I, Chris, looked at that house in 1996 when, right after the Renzinos, you know, moved out.
Gotcha.
And for whatever reason, it didn't work out. But and that's all fine, well, and good. But one of the things that we thought was real neat was when you're going through a house with a real estate agent, you know, you can go everywhere. So we opened up the door and went down to the basement, and Mr. Renzino's wine press was still in the basement, at least in 1996. Okay. And you'd open up the door, and it was just like this little corner. You open up the door, and the smell of the fermented grapes just kind of permeated all the wood in the basement. So it's kind of a cool side.
Very neat. Yeah. No, it's great. Great history on that house.
See, and that's people don't know.
Right.
Let's go up Bales and up on the corner, the Mrs. Harvey Brower House. That's what, 3425, I think?
Yes, it is. And that, Sean O'Toole owns that house now. I think he bought it around 2004. But, and that house, was on our tour, I think, in 2015. So it's been a number of years. And Sean has done a lot of restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's one of those houses, all of which on our tour this year are mostly original. It's only the first floors of these homes that are open that day, but you really get a sense of what it looked like back in the day. And Sean has been very respectful to do what he can to furnish it so it's comfortable and livable. It's not, you know, as it was built, I think around 1908, maybe. But it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It has original stained glass windows and original unpainted woodwork. And again, a very, very large dining room that Sean has worked to extend, restore original windows that have been reduced in size at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And a really pretty, I think it's called a frieze, plaster work that's in the ceiling.
Right.
So, Sean is really proud of it, and he really has worked very, very hard to sustain that house. So.
That one in particular, kind of had, when I moved into the neighborhood in 1990, that was where real estate agent David Miller and his wife lived.
Right.
And so they had done all of the, I should say, a good percentage of the restoration work, and they were very proud of it, and with the Victorian papers on the inside and things like that. And then when they sold it, there was a guy that had it, and I wasn't a real big fan. He started changing things around on the outside, and he's the one to put that circle drive in,
right.
That's now gone.
Right.
Thank God. But some of the histories of these homes. It's thank God Sean has it now, and everything that he's done to bring it up to speed in terms of historical accuracy.
Agreed.
Down the street and across the vacant lot, across the paddock, You're also going to have the Robert A. Long Motor Garage on tour. What was the Motor Garage for the Long family? Talk a little bit about that and some of the things that, some of the features of that particular property.
Gotcha. So this is one, and I don't believe that you would know better than I, but I don't believe that that building has ever been on a tour before.
Not that I know of.
So, okay. So this is kind of a neat one for us to be able to promote in that it's, you know, an added feature for this year. So Virginia Betancourt, who we'll talk about in probably a couple of minutes, she owns that, the old Long garage that you're talking about. And it is really, really fascinating from the standpoint, not only what it was, but how it's Virginia has taken it and makes it desirable and realistic today. For example, the first floor, from what she's educated me, was really never finished because that was the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And she will elaborate that day and say how many cars, vehicles could be stored there at that time. I think it was 6 or 8. It was quite a few. And it had one of those turntables that, you know, would allow the person to drive the car in but not have to do, you know, 3-point turns or whatever it would be to manipulate it to face back out to the street through the driveway. So the turntable's no longer there. But Virginia's done a lot with stabilizing, you know, obviously leveling the floors and so on to make it to where, I don't know if she's going to make it an event space or something that people can rent out or see, but it's a large open area because it was the garage, but it has a great kitchen. It's, I think it even has a bedroom in back. And then upstairs, which is where the mechanics, I believed, for Mr. Long's, you know, for his cars lived, are two different apartments. One will be open that day. So there is a second floor on one of the houses that will be open that day. But Virginia's going to have one of those apartments open. And shockingly, again, those are really, really large.
Yes. And largely original.
Yes, and very original. I believe there's a skylight and a very large butler's pantry in them. I think it's still in both of them. Which I think visitors will find especially interesting because it really gives some insight to not just Long's grandeur with its mansion, which is, of course is amazing, but how the people that helped sustain his property, how they lived and what they were doing to help make it stable.
Exactly. And that's you're right. Staff did live in those second floor apartments. There were domestics and, you know, staffers, chauffeurs, drivers, whatever. Lived in those units. There was another unit to the north that I think Virginia is probably redoing. But interestingly, and we'll talk about this in a minute, the people that lived there from 1964 to roughly 2000, Jacqueline Filardo and her husband Marco, they were principals at the Roma Bakery Company. And they're the ones largely that converted that first floor over into living quarters. They bumped out the south wall, created that larger kitchen space, added the garage underneath.
Right.
And, you know, they were really a stabilizing factor because to make their mortgage payment, they did what, you know, if you own a duplex, you rent one, own one.
Right.
And so they did that. And they had some old friends, older Italian families that lived upstairs in those apartments. Mm. So it was, I guess, a source of comfort for us living across the street. But okay, there's Jacqueline. They're entertaining today. They got Joe and Carl, or I can't remember what her son's names were. They're over for 4th of July, or they're doing this, that, and the other thing. This is another one that kind of fell on bad times. After she sold it, it went into the rental pool, if you will. It was bought by an investor. And the neighborhood organization, myself included, constant problems. And so finally that individual sold it to Tracy and Micah Gardner, who did a lot of work in stabilization as well, raised their family there, and they had an opportunity to live closer to the school. And, you know, right. God love them. They went and took that opportunity. So Virginia and her husband picked it up, and they've been doing a lot of work over there.
Right.
And I think it was Tracy and Micah that painted it back to green because it was white.
Oh, yeah.
But they went back with the historic color. I may be wrong, but it looks much, much better now
yeah.
than it did 10 years ago.
Right. That's great. And Virginia, we'll talk about that day, or I'm sure somebody will mention it, that the, let me think a second. So the original door or doors that were on the garage or the building were discarded, were gone long before the people I think you're mentioning owned it. I think she even said it's gone by the 1940 picture, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, Virginia has refabricated, had the doors recreated. I haven't seen them yet. I think one of her goals is by tour day to either have them reattached or to have them on display. But I haven't, I've been in touch with her the last few weeks. So, but knowing that Virginia is going to that extra length, because, you know, to go to that level of detail and, you know, expense, then, you know, you've really got to care about what the property looks like and about its history.
And the other house that Virginia owns, obviously, is right next door to the north, the old Herman Schmelzer house. And there's a, and I hope you hit on this on the tour day. One of the aspects of the Schmelzer house was that it was actually moved to its present site. And it was the last house that was moved off the long site for Corinthian Hall to be completed. What are we going to see inside of, I think it's, what is it, 3401?
3401,
Gladstone,
right.
Yes.
Yep. So, as you already mentioned, Michael, so Virginia and Keith Betancourt owned that house as well as the long garage behind it. So sometimes people aren't able to readily identify it, but once you do, as you were describing, the stone house with the green tile roof and that, then it really becomes, oh yeah, I know that house. So knowing where it came from, catty corner to it, you know, over where Corinthian Hall is important to how and why it ended up where it did. So the first floor will be open of Virginia and Keith's house that day. And Virginia has, again, most of it inside is very original. And so it's got beautiful woodwork. I think Virginia, and she may elaborate more on this, or at least one of her docents will, because it was originally built as a Victorian over in its first location. When it was relocated around 1909, or 10, maybe somewhere in there. It was modified slightly or updated, so it does have some of a more mission style appearance to some of its architectural detail inside. But I tell you, it's really no less a reflection on the craftsmen that were still working hard in that era to update from the Victorian era, but to also keep the precision as part of their career and what they did. So that day, back to your question, it will be the whole first floor open. Again, beautiful gentleman's parlor, ladies parlor, dining room. And so those are really going to be the main features. And Virginia is an avid collector of more original pieces, not to the home itself, but to that era. So you'll see with her a lot of her furnishings, the light fixtures and the actual furniture, where she's worked hard to make it feel like you really have stepped back into how the house looked 100 plus years ago.
And the interesting little factoid is that when they moved that house across the street, since the motor garage was already in place, they had to demo part of the house in order to fit it onto that lot. So what, and you can't tell, if you look at the back of the house, you can't tell. Right. The stonework, speaking to the craftsmanship, that you can't tell that they did that. I don't know what they did with the rubble, but just kind of an interesting little factoid about
it. It is. Yeah, they made it fit on the piece of property and, you know, without destroying or remodeling the actual house itself.
And they've gone, and again, back to previous owners, Tracy and Micah, they did a lot of the heavy lifting. There's a KCP&L easement there where for many, many years, decades, the house at 3401, let me see if I get this right. No, the motor garage, the north part of the motor garage was actually on the 3401 parcel, to where the property line for 3401 actually cut through the motor garage. And so Tracy and Micah, to their credit, man, she did the heavy lifting and getting that taken care of and getting it separated.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what the status is of the KCP&L easement there, but it was just, it was a nightmare. And that's why, you know, either one of those houses, you know, if they put them up on the market, they would sit. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see the inside of that, because the last time Skerritt had it on tour, and I don't feel bad saying this, the interior of the house wasn't all that hot. And the homeowner at that particular point in time wanted to focus on, God forgive me, the Hummel collection that she had, instead of, you know, we want to talk about Herman Schmelzer. We want to talk about the house move and all this. We'll talk about the Hummels if you want to talk about the Hummels.
Right, yeah.
I ain't going to Carthage, but anyway. Right. Sorry.
Good point.
It's time to take a break to thank our sponsors. Shemeika's Online Market in Delhi, offering catering and nationwide shipping at shemeikasonline.com. Find their new deli at 16th and Swift in North Kansas City. Shemeika's, where customers become friends and friends become family.
From classics to campers, hot rods to hoopties, Seberg Muffler, your exhaust headquarters since 1974. Armor Road in Burlington in North Kansas City, Missouri.
And now back to the newscast.
Let's go down the street. I want this. This one is just, my God, talk about the Calvert Hunt House. Bill Stout. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep. Oh, talk about that. 3616.
Yeah. So this is a real treat for us, too. And I don't, again, you would know better than I, but I don't know that it's been, I know it hasn't been on any KCHS homes tour, and maybe not a homes tour yet. I know not since Bill has owned it.
Yeah.
It was open for, I can't remember if Darlene Victoria de Leon had a coffee club or Jan Bentley had a bungalow. There was some type of event there.
Yes. And is that the same event? I think maybe I was there. We were there, I should say. The kitchen wasn't quite finished yet.
Probably not. Probably. Yeah, it probably is that same event.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So Bill, I think he bought it maybe around 2001 maybe, but he couldn't move in for at least a couple of years. From what he reported, the previous owners had not discarded anything in decades. And so, yeah, so he was filling dumpsters. You know, you've heard stories about these types of properties. The previous owners didn't get rid of anything. So, and I've asked Bill, I said, hey, well, was there anything of value, you know, or did you find anything? And he said, just a few books. I think that's what he said, mm-hmm. that he did keep, but everything else really didn't have a lot of either interest to him or value. Nothing original to the home, of course. But Bill really has meticulously worked as well, kind of like Shauna Virginia and Barbara and Kenny, to keep the originality, restore it to how it looked, and he has also worked, like Virginia, to furnish it of that era. It's very mission style inside, and it's just beautiful with the original sconces and stained glass lamps that hang above the dining room table. And it really is a credit to him to not, I mean, because you kind of have to work extra hard to keep and make sense of what you've got, versus just say, hey, I'm going to get rid of it. I'm going to put in, you know, all new. But he didn't do that. He really believed in bringing back the appearance and the feel of how it did back in its glory days.
That, when I moved in, my first house was 3622 Windsor, which is, I mean, that house was right up the street from my house. So, and at the time, a guy by the name of Philpott, that was the last name, owned it. And he was retired TWA, and he had this old, oh my God, had this old beater Chrysler that he drove around. And if you saw Philpott driving, he had a cigarette in his mouth, period, the end. Car was not air conditioned. He'd go down the road. But the side porches were just stacked to the ceiling with stuff, like old console television sets, mm-hmm. and just stuff. And we were having an event. It was a Skerritt, I think it was an afterglow to our homes tour at the time. I can't remember which tour it was. But we were down the street, and two of the ladies that live in a neighborhood were over there with us. Said, well, come on, let's go. I want to go see Philpott's house. And so it was Edie Bartolome, Shannon Cambiano, Abby's mom, mm-hmm. and Cindy Kilborn. And Cindy lived at 3511. Abby grew up at 414 South. And then Edie was right across the street at 412 South Gladstone. Gotcha. So they go walking down it, and we're thinking they're not going to get in. They're not going to get past the front door. And they go knocking on the front door, and Philpott opens up the door, and we just wanted to see the inside here and lets them in. Lets them in. And I'm, get out of here. You did not. And by God, they did. And, you know, what they described was, it was typical hoarder house. There was a pathway from the front door, you know, to the dining room or to the kitchen and upstairs. And I think Bill told me at that one event that I think we were both at, that there was, at the time, there was a water leak that was on the third floor all the way down into the basement that needed, you know, required. But that's the way this Philpott guy was. And when he passed away, I remember Bill got it. And the dumpster, I don't know how many, you'll have to ask him how many dumpsters he hauled out of there. But it was just, there goes another one. There goes Philpott stuff down the street. It was just, and that was one of the ones that really, I was so happy to see restored, because it's such an important piece of Northeast history.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. I didn't, as you all know, when you've got that level of, you know, accumulation and stuff, the first few months are probably spent just clearing it out to see what you have left to work with.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you can't even really see the bones of what's, you know, original or what you want to retain until you clear out a lot of that stuff. So as you said, to Bill's credit, you know, he's really done a marvelous job.
And that, I don't want to get into, what do they call them, spoilers, but that house, I just remember it, and I'd had a couple beers, and it was like, this is breathtaking.
Yeah.
I mean, just a breathtaking restoration.
Great.
So, and then we go on to the Kansas City Museum. You're going to be touring the museum. They're going to have docents inside the Kansas City Museum.
Right. As you know, the museum will be open anyway that day, which is great. So there'll be a lot of activity there just by visitors seeing the museum that day. We will have a few, five or six, I believe, total docents in any KCHS purple t-shirts, so people will be able to identify them. There'll be more. They will have some scripts to talk about as well. I'm not sure if people going to the museum will be going specifically for our tour. I think they'll probably want to see the displays and what other activities are going on at the museum. I know there's a lot happening in October there, but we will have docents there as well. So the museum has been very supportive in helping get word out about our tour. They're also offering for our tour guests that day a 20% discount at their gift shop, which I think is called the Wisteria Boutique. So that's nice of them to offer that perk to any of our Homes Tour visitors who want to go shopping that day over at the museum.
So tickets, how can people get tickets?
Great. So on Eventbrite and on the NEKCHS Facebook page and website, there is a link to go in to get tickets. I think it's $18 in advance, and then they'll go up to $20 for the day of the tour. We really wanted to make it affordable so people could, you know, see the houses and go into them. So, you know, we're really trying to keep an eye and keep the prices to where we think it's reasonable for folks to be able to afford to see these houses. This year is an especially big year, really, because it's our number 10.
Right.
So that we really wanted to have some special houses, and all of these homeowners, as most of them are every year, have really, really been great as far as participating and, you know, helping, opening up their homes and very gracious about it. Another event or side event that we're having the day of the tour, I can't remember the name of the organization, it's escaping me, but it's a vintage car club that specializes in cars that are pre-World War II.
Okay.
And there will be several of those vintage cars, and I don't know how many, but on the streets that day. So that'll be nice, too, for people who maybe, you know, they do want to see the houses, but maybe they're also interested in vintage cars. So, and I don't know the type of cars. I'm not sure that's been totally decided yet. They will, again, there are going to be some cars that are on display as well, which will kind of add to the feel, you know, of a historic neighborhood.
It just kind of gives it that added flavor,
right?
If you will.
Yep.
So your website is
NEKCHS.com.
Okay.
The website itself is pretty basic, which is good because you go right to the main page, and I think you click on one or two different links, and you'll be right at the events, the Eventbrite page. If anyone prefers to pay, you know, with cash or check, of course they can do it the day of the tour as well.
And then you've got a Facebook page also.
We do.
Where people can get tickets.
Yep.
And then also, where will you be set up on the day of the tour?
So the Long Garage at 203 North
Indiana.
Thank you. Almost a day, so I was off by a block. But yes, North Indiana. The first floor, as we already mentioned, is pretty open. And so rain or shine, you're going to be able to walk into that first floor off of Indiana and go into where we'll have the booklets. You know, if you've prepaid, that's great. You can just pick them up. If you want to buy them that day, that's great also because you can just buy them there. So the tour really starts at that point. However, as you know, they're all walkable. The farthest house is Bill Stout's, a couple of blocks away to the east. But you can go to any house first that you like and then visit them in any order you want. So again, but probably the place to start would be at the Long Garage, 203 North Indiana.
And which is right across the street, catty corner from the museum. And
exactly.
So you'll be visible. And then you're also going to have books and other things on sale?
Right. So we have our NEKCHS published Volume 2 that features histories of properties in the Northeast area. Also, NEKCHS is helping an avid supporter of our organization, Steve Knoll, who published or was the backbone behind publishing a book called Kansas City Houses.
Yes.
So you're probably familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it features historic photos and histories of a lot of Kansas City homes, properties. And so for any books that we sell of those that day, which we'll also have at the Long Garage with our NEKCHS book, NEKCHS gets a portion of that sale. So we'll have those for sale there as well.
And Steve is another one of those champions of historic preservation. I can't say enough about Steve.
Yeah, he's great guy.
Just a great guy.
Yeah.
So the date, October 14th, that's a Saturday, the 10th annual Northeast Kansas City Historic Society Homes Tour in the Skerritt Renaissance neighborhood.
10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that because I totally forgot. And anything else that we can add?
You know, I don't think there is. We will have a couple of food trucks there as well. So, of course, the noon hour is going to be right in the middle of the tour. So people will be able to purchase food. You know, restrooms, of course, at the museum, which will be open that day as well. So we also have several. And these ladies came last year. It was a tour bus from Sedalia, Missouri.
Yes!
And so they, a group of them is coming back again this year. For the tour. So that's really kind of a nice partnership we've made with them. And also kind of on a side note real quickly, a group of I think 9 of us went to St. Louis 2 weekends ago for a historic homes tour there. It was in an older neighborhood called the Old North. And it's basically 1870s to 1910 homes. It's a very, again, old part of town, obviously.
Lafayette Square area, or?
Just north of there.
Okay.
So it wasn't a Lafayette Square tour this time, but a group of us did go. And it's a neighborhood that reminds me a lot of the Northeast area in that it's had peaks and valleys. It was originally built to be, you know, a very nice part of town. But, you know, with urban decline, sometimes neighborhoods aren't always able to sustain the level of upkeep that it needs. So this neighborhood is working hard. It was a really, really nice homes tour, nice people. They had good volunteers that helped us really feel at home. We told them about our tour coming up on October 14th. So I do think that some folks from St. Louis may make that trip across the state to come on our tour as well.
That's really cool. And I know you were in St. Joe recently. Was that you that was in St. Joe?
I wasn't. At that tour? It was the same weekend as we were in St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
But St. Joe has its tour also.
What is it? Rubidoux Hill.
Yes.
And the Shakespeare.
Right.
Sorry. Never mind.
Beautiful.
Anything else?
Hey, I really appreciate the opportunity to open up these homes on behalf of the homeowners. So if folks are available on Saturday, October 14th, please come see us again, 10 to 3, at the Long Garage, and we'll be happy to orient folks that aren't as familiar with the area as some who are, so we'll get them, you know, started on the right path. Again, it's also walkable from the farthest distance. You're probably talking a 10-minute walk. So,
well, Kent Dykus, Chairman of the Northeast Kansas City Historical Society, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael.